the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. It's episode 400 of the show, and we have a special guest. This is a special edition of the show because we have a guest on, former Arizona Cardinals player, whose father also played in the NFL for the Cardinals. One of, I believe, only, I think it is, if I recall, three or four father-son combos to play for the Cardinals. Devon Kennard, DK, played for the Cardinals for about 2.5 seasons. Now doing lots, like, still doing the NFL stuff and then doing a whole lot of things off the field. If you follow his Twitter account off the field and then with a new venture. But DK, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate the time. How you been?
I'm great, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to kind of get started. Obviously, for those of you who are familiar with the scene here, is that DK grew up here. His dad, Derek Kennard, played for the Cardinals in the early 90s on the offensive line. Devon was a standout high school player at Desert Vista, who then was highly recruited, went to USC. I might be a little bit bitter about that because he didn't go to SU. That's okay. That's old news. That was a long, long time ago. And has since played 9 NFL seasons, drafted by the New York Giants, spent several years there, then with the Lions, and then signed with the Cardinals in 2020 after getting released, and then spent the last 3 seasons with the Cardinals before they finally part ways with him, where he ended the season with the Baltimore Ravens. But we kind of want to go back to the first part. Obviously, growing up here, playing high school ball here, what did it mean for you to come back? I know you've talked about this a little bit over the, especially back in 2020, 2021. What did it mean for you to be able to play for the team you grew up watching?
It was kind of surreal because, you know, being a football family, we ended up in Arizona because my parents played, my parents moved here when my dad played here, and they fell in love with Arizona, you know, so I was born and raised. I'm the only one in my family that was born and raised here. I got an older brother and sister, and it's because they kind of set roots and made Arizona home, specifically Ahwatukee for all the Arizona natives out there. And that's how I ended up going to, you know, Desert Vista and all of that. So for me, you know, being able to play for the hometown team, I grew up going to Cardinals games, and that's who I watched. I have to admit, because my dad played for the Cowboys too and won a Super Bowl with him, I kind of grew up a Cowboys fan, but I didn't watch them much because I was always at the Cards game. So, you know, for me, it was a cool kind of upbringing, and then full circle being able to come home to play, but while simultaneously playing for the same organization my father did. So that was cool.
Going back to that, because now I know that you have friends here. In fact, Lisa Matthews, who worked for the team, I know that you and I, whether it's her husband or her that you knew already, yeah. I know that you guys are fairly close. I remember when the Lions released you, and I messaged Lisa. I say hey, any could we get Devon here? And she just sent me a message like, I don't know. And then, like, how did that? Because it was so fast. How quickly did that go down after your release from the Lions? Was the release kind of known, and so you had feelers out there already? Because we felt that was like it was super fast how that went down after the release to sign with the Cardinals.
Yeah, it was a complete surprise. You know, for those that don't know, when I had my best years in the league with Detroit, I was. You know, funny story, I even tell it in my book a little bit, but when I was released from Detroit, it was such a surprise because that offseason I was in Miami for the Walter Payton Man of the Year nomination. I was with Detroit Lions, you know, president, owner, head coach, GM, everyone. And then I got wedding, and at my wedding, got married February 29th, 2020. And my wife and I, and that morning, you know, I got calls from the GM and head coach, and like, oh, you know, you're the kind of guy we want to continue to build this program around. You know, the whole gambit. Oh. And congratulations on the wedding. They knew the whole, you know, half the team was there. Matthew Stafford, Marvin Jones, like all the guys that I played with. And then a couple of weeks later, I'm on a massage table, not worried about free agency starting at all. But I think that's the business of sports that people don't realize. You know, they signed Jamie Collins. He didn't play my same position, but they allocated a good amount of money to him. And we were already in talks for, you know, renegotiating my deal because I was on, and like it just worked out. They knew what I was wanting and what I expected, and they felt like it was going to be hard to reach that, and felt it was best to part ways. So it was kind of sudden, but I was coming off two of my best years in the league, so it wasn't necessarily a panic, but it was interesting because I left Detroit and came back home in the offseason expecting to go back. So, you know, I had my house there. Everything was set up. So it was kind of interesting to, you know, become a free agent, figure it all out. And then there was immediate interest with the Cardinals as soon as it happened because they felt like they needed outside linebacker help. And, you know, I have, you know, relationships within the organization just personally. And you know, my agent represents actually you know, Cliff as well. And,
you and Kyler and Cliff all have Eric Burkhardt.
Yeah. I have the same agent as those guys, so, you know, my agent already knew they needed outside linebackers. So once I became a free agent, those conversations became easy. And then with Kime and his whole staff, I'm a local kid. So they knew all about me. So I think that made the whole process easier because there wasn't a ton of, I'm guessing research, like, you could turn on the film. They saw what I did in Detroit.
Oh, and the game that you had in the opener in 2019 as well.
So that, and then they have background information on me and my family already. So I think, and then, you know, with my agent representing me as well, I think the whole kind of trifecta of all of those things that's how it happened so quickly.
Oh, excellent. So I'll admit that from what you had done in Detroit and I felt, and then coming to Arizona, I was really excited because I felt that from your, you know, skill set, build, and everything was perfect for that 3-4 outside backer spot. And you had some success playing like off the ball, but in a 4-3. So it's a little, obviously, you know, a little more, you obviously know more about schematically, but being able to be basically being a full time edge guy. I felt that was a perfect match, and I was super excited pairing you with Chandler that year in 2020. And you know, then the pandemic year hit. Obviously, you've talked about it before, how that season didn't end up going the way you wanted to. You obviously were well-liked. You were well-respected in the locker room, but the production-wise didn't happen what I'm sure you expected as well. As you look back on your time with Arizona, what happened there? And you obviously, when you did play, we saw there were many times when you, especially as your role diminished, there was still production there. But
yeah.
2020, you had injuries, you had COVID. 2021, towards the end of the year, was when they moved on to Marcus Golden, where you saw your playing time diminish significantly. How do you look back on your time here with the Cardinals?
Man, it's just I'll always kind of wish it played out differently, but the NFL is a very, like, man, it's the nature of the beast kind of deal. So when I came in, you know, I had big expectations. I think the intention was fully like they were moving Hassan Reddick back to outside linebacker, but they didn't know if he could really do it. They didn't know if he was undersized, you know, like, because there's a reason why they didn't put him there originally, you know, at least organizationally, why they had him inside. So I think I was kind of a safety valve in that way. Like, oh, we don't, like, obviously we have Chandler Jones. They lose
Suggs. They moved on from Suggs.
They lose Suggs. They're moving Hassan Reddick back to outside. But, you know, they wanted to shore that up. So I think that's a lot of what that was. But obviously when Hassan went back to his natural position, I think people started to realize pretty quickly he could really play. But how that really went down is I was dealing with injuries, you know, entire camp. I had a strained calf and I was kind of playing through it, but it was irritating me. But then to start the year, you know, when I'm talking with people and they say like, when I had a true starting role, you know, look at the first three games of 2020. I think I had 6 to 8 tackles. I can't remember my stats exactly, but like 2 or 3 sacks in that time frame. You know, 6 to 8 tackles, a few TFLs. Like I was on a roll despite everything with Hassan, with Chandler coming from injury. But then I strained my calf against Detroit, which I had in 2020, which I had a sack against. So that was my old team, and I had a sack against Stafford. Strained my calf at the end of the game. I missed a couple of weeks, and I came back, and I was trying to hurry back, but honestly, I wasn't playing. I wasn't – I restrained the calf, so I wasn't playing my best ball. And then COVID happens, and I got COVID. I had to miss a week, and then they signed Marcus Golden, and which me and Junk are great friends, yeah. But, you know, nature of the beast, you know, I had, so you combine injury with COVID, and then I get back into the fold, and now we have Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, and Hassan Reddick is humming, and you know, it was kind of curtains from there. So now I'm looking at limited time, and you know, people are always so critical, and I'm like, you got to really understand football. At that point in time, I'm playing first and second down, strictly run situations. So people look at my production and it's like, you know, I'm coming in spotting like here and there, a couple of snaps here. That's a challenge to get into a rhythm in general. And, you know, once that happened, that's kind of what it was. And then once I got pegged as that, that's what it was 2021 and, you know, my time in 2022. So it was kind of the organization, which is, you know, once again, like some of it's my fault. I think one thing I do regret, I came back too fast from my calf. Some of my worst football, one of the games was Seattle, and the other game might have been Dallas 2020. I just wasn't all the way ready, but I was trying to rush back. I have that regret. But besides that, it's just the nature. Like, I was in a room full of other good players. Till this day, I feel like I can still, you know, play a major role and be a starter in this league. But how it started to unfold in Arizona is they didn't look at me that way. And we had guys that I really respected and that were good players as well. So when it comes to production, I mean, when you look at the snaps I got and how I produced, I mean, I was even in 2020 and 2021 with my per snap basis, I was still performing, but it was just limited reps. And that's how it kind of played out. And that's, you know, once again, just how it goes. You never know how things are going to kind of unfold. I definitely wish there was more opportunity, but you know, I don't have any regrets. I love playing here. I love the organization, and I respected the guys that we had in the room. But I definitely look at, like, there's a small window of you know, really being able to play three downs and get an opportunity. And what, it was 3 or 4 games. I think it was 3 to be exact in 2020, and that's all I ever really got. Besides that, I never played really on third down, never really got any pass rush opportunities. And I was kind of earmarked as one of our best run stoppers.
Yeah.
So like, I had to do that very well. So even on first and second down, I need to play the run well. I can't act like it's pass and then I'm not doing a good job in the run. So, and it's because then there's no reason to put me on the field at all. So it made it challenging to be successful rushing the passer. So, you know, that's kind of how it unfolded.
Well, and fans who watch the game, even in those limited reps, those snaps that you had on the field, you'd see your name come up making plays in the open field. You'd have a tackle for loss here and there. And so it wasn't like when given the opportunities, you weren't making plays. It's just obviously. Coming up next on the Rise Up Searhead podcast, the Mr. of Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's talk a little bit more about, coaching changes in 2022. The change in teams, and his perspective on what went wrong last year for the Cardinals. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The 2022 season was different for DK, obviously. He started the year, like, he renegotiated his deal so that he could stay on the team. I will say this. I don't know, like, at roster cuts, was it a surprise for you when they initially cut you? We all supposed that it was a little bit of roster manipulation because of you had the guarantee money already in hand, so it didn't make sense to cut you. But because of the practice squad rules, that it, we figured that you would be brought back and then elevated, especially since even before you were put back on the roster, you were still listed on the depth chart. Did you know that was going to be the case? Because I seem to recall when the roster announced roster cuts were made, there was a little bit of surprise from your Twitter account.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely surprised. You know, that was the one thing the whole time. I have an immense amount of respect for the business of sports. So, but that was the one thing how that went down with the release of 2022, to where I didn't really get much reps in preseason.
None of the starters did.
And when I played, it was against Baltimore. And I went crazy. I had eight snaps, and I balled out, and that's all I got. So in that case, I was like. You know, if they're even thinking about releasing me, then they're going to play me more. And I'm ready. Like, you know, you see what I did in the small sample that I got. I felt good. So for that reason, I felt a little jaded in a sense of like, if that's what was on your guys' mind, give me more opportunity in more of the games. I missed Tennessee because I was sick. So I was going to miss that game anyways. But the other games, like, let me get a little more spin in this, because you know, that's something you're considering, one, to put out more film to everybody else and to prove it to you guys. Cause it's like, if you were unsure at all, but you know, I think it came down to, they drafted three rookies. They didn't want to have to cut one of them.
Right.
And you know, with how the last 2 years went and the fact that I had guaranteed money, I think they were hedging their bet that, all right, we can manipulate things, release DK, sign him right back. So, you know, they're playing the business side of it.
So I've always wondered about this. When you were told, did they tell you that that was the plan, or was it just, hey, you're cut?
It was, they knew I would probably have interest, but they're like, you know, you're released, but we want to sign you. Okay. We would like to sign you back, type of deal. And, you know, I tried to put my pride aside. I had the opportunities to go other places, but I knew the camp I had here and the situation, to where I was like, you never know what you're walking into anywhere else. And I was like, this is kind of BS how everything went down, but I'm going to have opportunity to play significant snaps right off the bat here. I don't know if anybody else can really guarantee that or you know, I can be sure that that's going to be the option anywhere else. So that's why I ended up deciding to come back, even though I had opportunities. Looking at it in hindsight, I probably should have went to Baltimore then. But I just didn't know that they had a lot of injuries. They didn't sign JPP yet. And they wanted me bad and were pushing hard. But I was just like, I saw their roster. I saw these guys they drafted and had. And I'm like, is there going to be any real opportunity? Is it for sure going to be like, you know, the Cardinals are telling me you're going to sign back and play 20 plus snaps a game. And I'm like, is Baltimore really going to do that? Hindsight, I probably would have played that much, if not more. So that's probably what I should have did then. But I decided to come back because I knew the camp I had, and I was going to have an opportunity to play significant snaps. And so I came back to the Cardinals and played for a few games. And then Baltimore was trying to get me again. So that's why they ended up putting me on the active, because
that's Baltimore, what that was. Okay.
Baltimore wanted to get me again. They put me on the active. And then I'm on active for a couple of weeks. There are some injuries, and Keim and his staff ultimately wanted to see some of the rookies start to play more in the outside backer room. So I think that's why they cut me that time. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm done.
And I remember off on Twitter, you knew that that was probably your last game with the Cardinals, and you mentioned that, and then you end up signing with Baltimore. From a perspective of someone who ended up like the Cardinals might have won one game after you left. That, so from your perspective, as you started the season with the team, and obviously you ended up in Baltimore, but from your perspective, what was it what happened with that Cardinals team this last season?
I feel like things just went away quickly, and there was no way to get it back. I'm not sure. There's no way we thought that they were going to have the season that they had. Like, towards the end of the season, thought we expected a much better season than that. We knew to start the year it was going to be tougher without D-Hop, but obviously didn't know to what extent. So, yeah, I can't really put my finger on it, on how, like you can have the kind of year we had in 2021 and then come back in 2022. But it's like the kind of downward trajectory we had in the playoffs and at the end of the season in 2021, it's kind of like we couldn't really stop that downhill trajectory. And it seems like once I left, they still couldn't. And then you compound injuries and it got ugly quick, it looked like.
It did, for sure. And that led to a coaching change. And obviously, your time with Cliff, what impressions of your time there with Cliff as a head coach and obviously Vance as your DC, what were your experiences with those two? And do you know anything about Jonathan Gannon personally?
I don't. He had those guys humming in Philly this year.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't know much about him. And then as far as VJ and Cliff, I got an immense amount of respect for them. Within the whole process, they always kept it real with me. So I always respect that. VJ's scheme, I think, is exceptional. So I won't be surprised. It's kind of late how all that went down. So I don't know if he's going to sit out a year or what he's going to do. But I don't think it's going to be hard for him to find work and find a good situation. And same with Cliff. I mean, I think I saw articles about him getting interviewed for Houston. I don't know if he's going to take it. I'm sure he's not in no rush with that contract extension.
Right. It was funny. Last year, there was guys that they'd ask him how he felt about his job security. If he's worried about his job security, he said no. I mean, obviously, he didn't know if he was going to get fired or not, but he'd signed that 5-year extension. That means a lot of security.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I had a great, great relationship with them. So I got nothing but respect and, hope for the best for both of those guys.
Awesome. And your experience now, you went through, if I recall, did you go through the coaching change when they brought in Matt Patricia there in Detroit?
Yeah, he's the one that brought me in.
Okay. Coaching changes. How is that for a veteran player? When you go through a coaching change like that,
with Patricia, I was brought in, so I didn't really know any better.
Okay.
I'll say when I was in New York, I had Coughlin, and then it went to McAdoo, and that was like a shift. But
you were still very young in that point.
Exactly. So I wasn't a vet. Like it's, I would say, just looking at it outside in now, you want to be the guy that he chooses, or he like in, whether you're already there or he brings you in when it's the shift. Like, so that, keeping it real, there's going to be vets who can play for the Cardinals who Gannon's not going to choose. Like, and they're going to end up getting relieved just because they're not his guys. It doesn't mean they can't play. It doesn't mean they shouldn't be in the league, or they're not going to get opportunities elsewhere. And that some of them will be starters, role players, special teams guys, but I think that's the most interesting thing about it, is like that a coach comes in and they want their guys. And I feel like I saw that in Patricia in Detroit. Like, there was guys who could play, but I look back and he didn't think like Darius Slay and Quandre Diggs were fitting the culture he wanted to have. So he ended up trading.
Now they're balling with other teams.
He ended up trading those guys and things like that. And those are even starters. And obviously great players, Pro Bowl level players. So you see it on that level and lower, the role players, and even the special teams players. So I think that's the biggest, I would expect, like, as far as Cardinals fans listening to this and checking it out, I would expect significant turnover. There's no reason for Gannon to want or be motivated to keep the roster as is based on how last year went. He's going to want his guys, his vision of what it should look like. So that's a little different based on contract. So there's going to be guys that he keeps that he doesn't feel really fits, but so you're going to have to let it play out. It might be a year or two. Like even dating back to Detroit, it's not like he got rid of Slay and Quandre right away, but be expected to see some changes within the next 1, 2, and 3 years based on guys' contract and who he wants to bring in.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about what's next for DK. Free agency, what he's doing off the field, and his new book. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. DK, you're a free agent. What's the plan? Do you still plan on playing? You said you still got years left. Are you planning? Are you preparing for free agency? What's the outlook there first?
I'm still training, hitting it hard, and I plan on playing. But it does have to be the right situation. You know, I'm blessed to be in a position and have had the career I've had to where I'm not a guy that's just going to take any and everything and hop on a 90-man roster. Like, I think there's a reality that needs to set in to where, like, there's sometimes veterans get picked up and it's late in their career and they're bringing them on and they don't really plan on keeping them. They're kind of seeing, oh, could he fit? Like, I would need to go to a situation where I feel confident I'm getting a real opportunity. A real opportunity. And if that's the case, then I absolutely want to play. I just finished year 9, so double digits would be amazing. So that's fully my intentions, but I'm also not going to just take any and everything. Like, it has to be a good fit.
Do you have a goal in mind for how many years you want to play?
I've always 10 was always in the back of my head, and you know that's over time. At first, it's like, man, I got to get through rookie year, I got to get through my rookie. But now it's like I've always wanted to hit 10, but I feel very accomplished with what I've been able to do in the NFL thus far, to where you know it has to be the right fit. So if I can hit 10, I always said I'll take it 1 year at a time from there. So I'm not capping myself or limiting myself. It's going to be based on situation and opportunity. And, you know, if that comes and it's the right situation, I feel like I definitely have a couple more years. My body can definitely still go and I can play at the level that I feel is necessary to you know, be an NFL player and to really contribute defensively. That's a big thing. I want an opportunity on defense. Never really been a special teams guy, so I need a chance to play on defense. And if somebody's going to give me that opportunity, I would love to play a couple more years.
You obviously have a lot of ventures off the field, and try to educate other players around the league. Those around have been financial education, financial literacy of a way to take them, and especially guys who are making a lot of money in the NFL, to then turn that into passive income is a lot of what you try to push.
Right.
We see a lot on your Twitter page, on your Twitter account, but. How has that evolved? And then tell us about this book. What is the book about? When is it coming out? What is it all about?
Yeah, so my book is called It All Adds Up. You can pre-order it now. So go to devonkennard.com. It's on Amazon. Pretty much everywhere you can buy a book, it's there. It's a pre-order, and it's going to officially release in April. So please order it. And it's essentially about financial literacy. But I think sports fans all over are going to really appreciate it because I kind of go behind – like give you a peek behind the curtains of what it looks like being a professional athlete, what it was like for me growing up. I was high school All-American, number one recruit in the nation at some point before I hurt my knee in high school. And, you know, I go through the evolution of then till now and how that relates to finances and how athletes need to look at finances and how that relates to the average American and how I think the American dream that we know of it is dying. But people are still holding on to the principles of it, and you got to kind of let it go. And those are a lot of the principles I talk about, because I think passive income and creating multiple revenue streams, adding value to yourself and not being satisfied in where you're at. Those are a lot of things I talk about in the book and a lot of things I preach to, you know, all over my social media and also in the locker room, because what's unique about professional athletes is you don't know exactly how long your career is going to last. And the money you make, it has to sustain you for the rest of your life. And people see the amount of money we make and don't realize whatever that number is, you got to look at what's actually guaranteed. And then you got to cut it in half, because we're W-2 earners. We pay our agents 3%. So before you blink, like in Arizona, before I blinked, I was at 47 to 48% taxes. That's pretty much half. And that's before you spend a dollar. So helping guys understand that and look at ways to invest that's going to put them in position to be financially free when they're done playing. Because if you got a few million dollars in the bank from playing in the NFL, but that has to sustain you for the next 50 years, but you have a very expensive lifestyle habits and you have an expensive mortgage and car payments and going down the line, you're dwindling your net worth more and more if you're not creating passive income streams. So yeah, I'm very passionate about it. And I think those concepts are something that, you know, everybody, not just athletes, need to really consider.
I was listening to DJ Humphreys talk on a podcast recently, and it's something he learned from Fitz. And he said, like, kind of building wealth for your, you know, these game changing money, this life changing money that you get for your family, that the way to not only sustain your family, but then to continue to help your family is through business. So side incomes, revenue streams, building a family business and type of that. For the average American, there is a certain level, obviously, that you need to have to be able to start. How much do you need to start getting passive, or at least to start looking for passive income? How much extra do you need?
I think at first you got to start thinking about financial freedom first. And so the first thing you got to do is start saving. You know, if you're not saving anything, then you have nothing to invest. You have nothing to do. So saving is important. But with that, a huge piece that I feel like people don't talk about enough is adding value. Whatever you do for a living, how do you add value to yourself so you can increase your earning potential? I don't care if you run a plumbing business. I don't care if you're a professional athlete. How do you get very good at what you do so you can increase your earning potential? And then the things you're good at and passionate about, how can you maximize the earnings through that? So if you're if you're a plumber, how do you end up starting your own plumbing business instead of just being an employee? So you can earn more, so you can eventually hire out. Like, you have to think bigger and add value to yourself and keep growing. I think too many people, and from athletes to average people with 9-to-5 jobs, get a job and just go through the motions and don't do anything. And they just do the job, don't get better. And in football terms, we say you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You never stay the same. So you have to intentionally make that decision on if I'm going to be serious about my finances and get better. And the first two things you can do is add value to yourself and save more money. From there, once you start to do those things, your spread is wider. So if you're making more money and spending less money, now you that gap between the two, that's what you can start to invest and do things and think about whether that's, I think real estate is a great thing to invest in, but whether it's real estate, starting businesses, getting into bonds and stock, whatever you're going to do, but do it in a way where you actually have income coming in. Because I don't care what you do for a living, who wouldn't want $1,000 coming in passively, $2,000? Who wouldn't want to get to the point where they got $10,000 coming in? And that's possible. And I really realized it in college when I was going through a lot of issues and I didn't know if I was going to make it to the NFL because I faced more adversity, coaching changes, position changes, injuries. And I started to realize, like, okay, I met a mentor of mine and he started out as a police officer. And he now owns thousands of units in Los Angeles and manages over 5,000 units in Los Angeles. And I'm like, if he's able to do that starting off with a police officer salary, then there's really no excuse for me. And if I play 1 year or 10 years, if there's no excuse for the next person, because, you know, police officers typically don't make a ton of money, but he's been able to buy one property at a time and then start to leverage that and do things. So I explore every listener out there to start to think critically and don't just write yourself off. How can you save? How can you add value? How can you start to generate more income? And then how can you get started in investing in ways that you're bringing in income for yourself outside of your day job? And, you know, I think that's pivotal in the new American dream, because if you're a person in tech right now, they're firing thousands of people. Like, if you have no job outside, no income coming outside of that, and you're looking for work, that's a tough spot to be in. You know, that's risky. People say investing is risky. Going to a 9-to-5 job and just expecting they're going to keep you forever, that's risky too. But people don't acknowledge that risk. So, yeah, that's a long-winded answer. But, I think those are the things that people really need to consider.
The name of the book is It All Adds Up. You can pre-order it now. It's at devondacanard.com. You can go to Amazon, anywhere books are sold. It's coming out in April. Devon Kennard, somewhere will be playing somewhere in the NFL this season, we would imagine. DK, I really appreciate the time. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to see you balling out somewhere soon.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
All right, take care. Thank you so much. That wraps up this edition of the Rise Up Syria podcast. The best of our Cardinals talk. That was Devon Kennard, DK, with the book coming out soon. Seth and I will be back on the next show talking Cardinals news, coaching staff, and whatever news is coming up. And then next week as well, I have lined up a current Cardinals player who will talk about the last season, talk about the coaching change, and more. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.